Welcome back, everyone, to Aspire, the Leadership Development Podcast, where we will be discussing the visions, inspirations, and experiences from top educational leaders. My name is Joshua Stamper, and you can connect with me on Twitter or on Instagram at Joshua_Stamper. This week, I'm so happy to be joined by Jennifer Hogan. Jennifer is currently the Assistant Principal of Curriculum and Technology at Hoover High School. She has been a teacher, coach, assistant principal, and principal, and she's the author of the Handbook for Courageous Leaders. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm just so excited to be here. Thank you.
Yes. And Jennifer, as you know, the show is centered on leadership development. I would love to hear your personal leadership journey and how you became an administrator.
What I've learned in my 25 years in education is that my plan that I have laid out never really worked out the way I thought it was going to. I started out as a teacher and a coach, and after 4 years in education, I asked myself the question, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? I know sometimes people have those questions, and sometimes they happen at a time when they feel like they can't get out of education or try something else, but I was really fortunate. So I got out of education for 2 years, and that's when I realized this really is where I'm supposed to be. So there's really not a day that I come to work and I question where I am. So I'm back to teaching and coaching, did that for 6 years. But after about 3 years of coaching, my husband's job took him out of town. And both of my girls were really young, took him out of town Monday through Friday, and he was home on the weekends. And it was just really tough to teach and coach, work full time, take care of two little girls. And so I gave up coaching. I really thought that, you know, that I was going to build a dynasty at the high school where I was in coaching. And so during that time, my mom said, you know, if you want to go to graduate school, you can bring the girls, drop them off, go to class, come back and pick them up. So, you know, that sounded great. So I did that for 2 years. Meanwhile, my husband's job brought him back to Birmingham full time. So that was great. And then the summer that I ended my graduate school, I wasn't looking for a job, wasn't looking to get out of the classroom or get immediately into a leadership position. One of our assistant principals got a job about 2 weeks into the school year at another school district. So I applied for that assistant principal position where I was teaching and became assistant principal for 3 years. And it was great. It was an awesome school, awesome district. And actually, my daughters graduated from that school. After being there for 9 years, I left and went to another school as principal. I got a phone call one summer and went on to be principal for 2 years and then ended up leaving that district after 2 years. And funny enough, I went back to the classroom for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
And it was really neat because during that time was when I really became convicted about leadership in a school, just how much I enjoyed being in that position and knowing the big picture and having much more influence than the group of kids that were in my classroom. In the school where I'm currently at, this is my 10th year at Hoover High School. My 8th year as assistant principal there and just love it. So that's kind of my leadership journey. It's been more like a jungle gym than it has been a ladder, if you will, but it's been fabulous.
So what are the biggest differences between the assistant principal job and the principal job?
Oh, wow. You know how you hear that everything goes back to the principal, and it is the absolute truth. I mean, from the little things to the big things to the decision to the perceptions, it all rests on the principal's shoulder. And you go home every day and you worry about the safety of your kids and you worry about something happening and you wonder if it's going to work out or, you know, you take home a lot more burden as a principal than you do as an assistant principal. And at our school, we've got about 3,000 students. And so we've got a principal and 6 assistant principals. So we work really well as a team and we have a lot of autonomy in what we do. So each assistant principal is almost like a principal in their role, except for that stress, you know, knowing that you are the person that it rests with when you're the principal. There's a lot of, at our school, our principal role, he has a lot of managerial type tasks that he takes care of and a lot of PR and meeting with outside groups. And then we do a lot of the work of, you know, running PBIS and getting into classrooms and working with instructional leadership teams and PLCs and those sorts of things. But it all works. I mean, everybody has a role and it takes all of us to make it work.
So in your transition from a teacher to an administrator, what was the largest misconception you had in your administrative experience?
I think the largest misconception that I had is that when I was a teacher, I just kind of thought everybody did what I did in the classroom. I thought that teachers taught bell to bell. I thought teachers had good classroom management. I thought teachers turned in all their paperwork on time. I thought that teachers built strong relationships with students. I thought that teachers, just kind of naturally knew what to do in the classroom and were flexible. And when I became an assistant principal and got to visit classrooms, that was the most eye-opening thing that I did. And I can still remember thinking to myself, why didn't I get to do this as a teacher? And so like the Observe Me movement, I think is so powerful, and teachers who go and visit other teachers, I just think that is so extremely powerful. That, I think, was the biggest misconception when I made that transition, just understanding what's happening in the school. I was just telling my husband the other day, when you're a teacher, you worry about your classroom. And when you're a school leader, a principal or assistant principal, you worry about everybody's classroom. And so I think that was probably the biggest eye opener for me, and maybe misconception.
And as an administrator, what is the most difficult part of your job?
Wow. These are tough questions, Joshua. I like them, though. I think they're really good. And I think all the questions that you've asked are things that aspiring leaders really need to wrestle with and think about and ask as many leaders as they can. Wow, what is the biggest burden as an assistant principal?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's making an adjustment from really dealing with kids or adolescents and then dealing with adult learners. There is a difference there. They're motivated differently. Building relationships can be a little different. And so I think that's not, I wouldn't really call it a burden, but I'd say it's a challenge when you're making the transition from working with and influencing kids to doing that with adults.
Mm-hmm. And I want to expand on the adult learner. You know, as an instructional leader, how do you help your teachers grow in their knowledge and teaching strategies?
You know, I really try to find out what their strengths are and really build from there. And I don't want to ever have a teacher feel like that maybe they're being insulted or belittled, or that, you know, their years of experience are for naught and that we don't respect that. And I think just trying to find out what those teacher strengths are and building from there, but then also respecting what they have been doing so far up to that point and helping them to realize, we're going to take these strengths that you have and we're going to make them even better, or we're going to show you how to take it to the next level. Sometimes that's hard because it means that people have to get out of their comfort zones, especially with an experienced teacher. That's really what I try to do, is to find everyone's strengths and build from there.
You had mentioned PBIS. For those who don't know what that acronym is, what is that program all about?
You know, this is the first year that our school is doing PBIS, and it's Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports. We have had the best start to the school year that we've ever had. It's the first year that we've done it. And so basically, we've created a common language between all of the students and staff in our school to create and understand what the expectations are for behavior in and around our school building, what it looks like in the classroom and the lunchroom and the hallways and the restrooms. And so now all of our students and staff can really describe what it is a student is doing if they're misbehaving, so that a student has clear expectations about what it takes to fix it. It's just been awesome. It's been really great. We're celebrating students for positive behavior. It's been an awesome start to the school year.
So in addition to PBIS, what other items are you using to create a positive culture in your school?
We've been using positive praise referrals for a few years now. And we love those. And fun when a praise referral comes in and you get to call a parent and read what the teacher wrote and call the student down and let them know, read it to them and take their picture and tweet it out. That's a lot of fun. But with PBIS and making it more systematic and school-wide and much more emphasis, we now have positive behavior referrals instead of praise referrals. And we do it through a Google form, which makes it really easy for the teachers. And we also shared the sheet that has all the results on it with all of the teachers. And so far, we've had about 300 students just in this first few weeks of school that have been recognized. And it has just been amazing. And it's so cool, too, when the teachers fill out the form, an automatic letter is sent home to the parents. And they get to see exactly what the teacher's written. And it's just the feedback that we've gotten has just been so fun. So those are great, you know, phone calls and messages that we get to send home with that.
So when you became an administrator, was there one area that you wanted to change in education?
the one area that I want to change in education would be the mindset of teachers and working with students who are unmotivated, those that are hard to reach, the underdog, if you will, because I believe that if we can just approach it from a point of view that all kids really want to learn, and we've got to peel the onion, peel back those layers and figure out why it is that they're not motivated, you know, look for the why behind the actions, and then also realize that we have a part to play, I think really is where my heart is and where my passion is in education.
For the aspiring leaders, what characteristics do you believe every leader should have?
Oh, wow. It is terrific that you're asking me this because I just started a 15-week series on my blog. And so this week I wrote about humility. And I think humility is such an important characteristic for leaders because we have to come from a place of servant leadership. And so for 15 weeks, I'm going to hit on 15 characteristics of compelled educators. And a lot of those, really all of those, would apply to leaders. And so I had some really good role models growing up. My father, many of the coaches that I had, one coach in particular, Bob Finley, was a true servant, you know, educator and leader. Just had some really good role models there who taught me you don't come first, that we come first, and we have to serve other people. So the first quality that I would say would be humility.
So a lot of people come from the coaching realm and go into administration. Was there anything that you use as a coach that you also use as an administrator?
Oh, yeah. Just managing groups, I think, for one, when you're planning events, when you're managing large groups, you're supervising students, planning, even just when it comes down to lesson design, I go back to my days of practice plans where, you know, when we planned practices, we only had a short amount of time and we wanted to be efficient and have everyone involved and everyone doing something at all times. And even now when I plan professional development, I don't want it to be just a sit and get, you know, where one person's doing the talking and everybody else is listening. I want everybody to have something to do and everybody's engaged. You know, really, I think just understanding how to create an activity for a group of people, not just a few people, but a large group of people, I think is really something that I honed through being a coach and having to design those practice plans.
And what do you do on your campus to increase student voice?
Well, we have a school hashtag, Hoover Pride, that we use to celebrate students. And our students are very familiar with our hashtag. They use it a lot. We're doing this year is we have a student who is running our school Twitter account and our school Instagram account. So that's fun. And she's getting behind the scenes and really starting to incorporate more student voice and giving them more opportunities to share on social media. We have a ton of clubs at our school and about 90% of our students are in clubs. And then within those clubs, we have a kind of an inner club council where the presidents of each of those clubs get together on a regular basis, discuss things that are going on within the school. So there's an opportunity for them to have voice. But then also we have a student diversity council this year that's new. We had a diversity council last year that was made up of staff members. And then we branched it out into students, and they met this summer and have planned some things for this year and really increased opportunity for student voice that way. I will say that I really feel good about our campus and our students feeling like they have an avenue, whether it's through another student, through a student group, with faculty members, and then administrators have open door policies. So, you know, it's kind of a multi-tiered approach to increasing and highlighting student voice at our school.
In addition to your admin position, you speak at conferences, you blog, and you're very active on social media. How do you find your voice beyond the campus?
I would say in those three ways. My blog, thecompellededucator.com, has been a fun way to make connections with people outside of the school and to share just my thoughts and philosophies and ideas, but then also to highlight things that are happening within our school. That's been a lot of fun too. And through you know, blogging, I've been able to create a compelled tribe, which is a group of edubloggers, if you will. Craig Vroom and John Winstrom and I, you know, run that group, if you will, where we created a Voxer group and we have a question of the week and we connect on Voxer. And then monthly, we have a common topic that we blog about. We read each other's blogs and share. And it's just been a huge community builder with all of us who are writers and reflectors and those who want to share with each other. That's been a lot of fun. And through Twitter, just social media has been the biggest game changer for me personally and professionally to make connections with people who do what I do, people that I can turn to for, you know, if I have questions that need to be answered, if I need encouragement, if I'm looking for support, if I want to give support, if I want to work with aspiring leaders, you know, it's been a terrific way to just connect with people outside of my school. And, you know, there's also a benefit to sometimes when you have issues within your school or questions or maybe things you're not sure about or a situation happens and you get to talk to somebody who's not in your building and who does what you do, who's not in your building. So they don't have a stake in the situation. They don't have personal bias in that situation. And you can get their opinion and their feedback to help maybe you to see a different side of it or to get an answer to a question or help with a problem. So through social media, through blogging, I've been able to connect with people really all over the globe. And it's been honestly the game changer for me as a school leader.
For those who haven't had the opportunity to read your book, The Handbook for Courageous Leaders, can you describe how the book may help our aspiring leaders?
You know, it has some scenarios and it has suggestions for really looking fear in the face and doing it anyway. So if you are fearful about making a decision about becoming a leader, if you're fearful that maybe you just don't have it or you are playing the comparison game, I think that that is a great handbook for anyone who has those kind of inner struggles with fear, who wants to have some encouragement to take the next step, whatever it is.
And for those starting their leadership journey, what advice do you have for them?
The best advice that I would say is to have a support network and a mentor. You know, get connected on social media, start following people, start connecting with people who do what it is that you want to do or that you're about to do, or maybe that's where your journey is starting. Listen to them, pay attention to them, and reach out to them. Create a network or join a network. A friend of mine, Jody Pierpoint, has started a aspiring leaders network across the country, and I'm a part of that. And so I'm a mentor to several mentees in that group. And then we created a Voxer group, a small group for just us. And so, you know, we talk about different scenarios that have come up and it's just terrific. So, you know, I would say get a mentor, ask someone to be your mentor if you're not really sure how to join a program that's like that. But, you know, if there's someone out there on Twitter that you follow and you respect and, you know, you can come right out and ask them, hey, I'd love for you to mentor me. Would you mind doing that? Can you be my go-to person? Would you mind if I ask you some questions along the way? You know, that I would say would be the biggest thing is don't be afraid to ask questions, get a mentor, get connected, have a support network.
And in closing, what is the most enjoyable aspect of leadership?
The most enjoyable thing about being an educator is realizing the impact that you have on kids. You know, I have adults now who come back and share stories with me from when they were kids. And I think that really is. I wouldn't even attribute that to being a leader, but being an educator. Being a leader, you get to know the big picture, what's happening in the school, and you get to know more kids than just the ones in your classroom. But really, it's the joy of knowing that you're going to make a positive impact on someone and it's going to affect their life in a positive way.
How can our listeners connect with you on social media?
I would love for them to follow me on Twitter, connect with me, reach out, send a message. My Twitter handle is @Jennifer_Hogan. You can read my blog at thecompellededucator.com. I would love for any of your listeners to connect with me and, you know, I'd be happy to talk further about anything that they've heard.
Please continue to check out the Aspire podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes and share your ratings and reviews. Don't forget to use the Aspire Lead hashtag as you continue the conversation on Twitter. Jennifer, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.